and more whispers today of a major staff shakeup at the White House. It is reportedly only a matter of time before National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster will be asked to leave President Trump's inner circle. And there are questions about how long Chief of Staff John Kelly will stay.
This latest White House churn comes as tensions rise with Russia and there are moves to resume diplomacy with North Korea. Let's get to all of that with Brian Bennett, White House correspondent for the L.A. Times. He joins us. Hi, Brian.
Hi, guys.
Hey. And let's listen here to President Trump yesterday on these rumored staffing changes at the White House just 2 days after he fired the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, on Twitter.
There'll always be change, and I think you want to see change. And I want to also see different ideas. Larry Kudlow just came in.
Brian, we're also now hearing that H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, could be next. Even Chief of Staff John Kelly. What are you hearing?
So right now, there's a lot of discussions inside the White House about exactly who to bring in. Obviously, President Trump pretty abruptly decided to bring Larry Kudlow on without a whole lot of vetting and discussion with his staff and announced that on Twitter himself. He did the same with Tillerson's departure. And so there's a lot of unease. I think on the McMaster question for Trump's national security advisor, I think talking to White House officials that Trump has decided he wants to replace McMaster, but hasn't decided on exactly when or who to replace him with. So he's been in discussions for weeks with a few people, including John Bolton and some others. And I think there's some concern that if McMaster goes now, it might be disruptive at this current moment where Trump is facing two critical decisions on the Iran nuclear deal and also potential meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
But then, and let me bring in Shannon Pettypiece, who's also with us, White House correspondent for Bloomberg. Why put this story out there if you're not ready to replace the person that you are saying is going to be fired?
Well, it's not necessarily an intentional leap, but go ahead, Shannon.
Oh, I mean, I was just going to say the White House really, though, has been trying to take the temperature down on this story. I mean, sometimes the president comes out with this tweet, he'll call something fake news. But, you know, Sarah actually came out with a statement this morning saying that there are no plans to currently replace him. Though, I mean, our reporting has indicated, I think that there might be the nuance here about is he being replaced today versus is he being replaced 2 months from now. And our reporting has indicated that longer term, and I can't even really define what longer term means, but that there is thinking longer term about McMaster's future and it not being as national security advisor, let's say a year from now, but it being somewhere else in the military where he could get that fourth star. So the White House is trying to take the temperature down on this story, though, and at least our reporting indicates that this might not be as imminent as it seemed this morning.
Brian, you mentioned all of these really important deadlines that are coming for the White House, North Korea being just one of them. But what does this constant revolving door mean for the way that business gets done at the White House?
Well, it's been chaotic for a year, and it means more disruption and more chaos as people move out the door. I mean, I think one thing that may align the cabinet a little bit more in Trump's interests is moving Tillerson out and putting Pompeo into the Secretary of State position. There has been tension between Tillerson and Trump because Tillerson's been slow walking options and pushing back against some of Trump's policies like the Iran deal or the move of the Israel embassy to Jerusalem. And by bringing in someone like Pompeo, who had a stable hand at the CIA but is ideologically much more closely aligned with Trump's objectives on Iran, for example, then that could maybe calm some waters and bring the White House and the State Department closer than it was when Rex Tillerson was running it. So we could see some of these moves try to align Trump's cabinet more with the things that he promised to do on the campaign trail.
When reporters have looked at who might be next on the chopping block at the White House, there are so many options. Housing Secretary Ben Carson, who's been in trouble for ordering expensive office furniture, and Veterans Secretary David Shulkin for taking his wife on the trips to go to Wimbledon, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt for his first-class travel, the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke for expensive new office doors, and, of course, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos after that 60 Minutes interview last weekend. Shannon, What do you make of that, that there are so many members of the cabinet that have gotten into trouble in the press and that President Trump apparently is not happy with?
Well, this is the guidance I remember being given during the Tom Price scandal.
The Health and Human Services Secretary who left.
It was taking private jets.
Right.
That if the president likes you and you are getting things done that he wants you to get done, he is willing to overlook certain things. If you were already on his short list, if you were not, he didn't feel like you were getting things done, he wasn't communicating with you well, he didn't feel like he had a good rapport with you, and then some piece of bad news or scandal comes out, you're much more likely to be taken
out. But that list was extremely long, and the president, you know, not that long ago said his cabinet was a shining jewel, that he was incredibly proud of it.
And when you look at, I mean, the thing that's baffled me out of all this is that Jeff Sessions is still here. But that goes back to this point that he might have some issues with Jeff Sessions, but Jeff Sessions is doing more, arguably, than anyone else in this cabinet to get his agenda done on immigrants, on crime, on drugs. So if you are getting things done for him, he'll overlook a lot of the controversy. But when either in the case of Tillerson, he feels like you don't have his back, you're second guessing his judgment, and then there's a little scandal or controversy around you, you're more likely to get thrown off the island in that sort of situation than if you're actually achieving his agenda and not going behind his back and second guessing him.
Since you mentioned Jeff Sessions, let's get to the Russia investigation. The FBI special counsel Robert Mueller subpoenaed the Trump Organization for documents pertaining to its business with Russia. Trump has said that the special counsel would cross a red line if the investigation reached beyond Russia to Trump family finances. Brian, what's your sense? Is the investigation crossing that line?
We're going to have to see how this plays out. If Trump is willing to ignite, you know, let yet another fire around his administration by pushing to clamp down on the Mueller investigation. I mean, that's definitely been a source of tension between him and Jeff Sessions, obviously, who recused himself from that. I mean, I think it's very interesting to see the intelligence officials in the Trump administration push for more sanctions against Russia, which closely align themselves with the Mueller indictments against Russians who were involved in meddling in the U.S. election. That puts a lot of pressure on Trump to finally admit that Russia was involved in meddling in the election, and it's going to be interesting to see how that tension plays out.
Shannon, why issue a subpoena for those documents? He could have just asked for them. Does it say something about what Mueller is thinking and the direction he's going?
Well, I don't know for certain why he issued that subpoena, but when I've talked to lawyers about this, there is a thinking that the Trump Organization has said all along that they've been turning over documents, that they've been cooperating, that they have been there has been a back and forth between the Trump Organization and Mueller. And it would not be surprising if, yes, Mueller had been asking all along for documents from the Trump Organization. And if it's particularly related to Russia, that would be within Mueller's mandate. If he was looking at anything related to Trump Tower Moscow, the issue of the red line, the lawyers had said, is if you get outside this purview of Russia, if you're asking about a sale of a mansion in 2007 or something that they feel is not related to Russia. And we don't know the exact wording of the subpoena. But there is one idea which we saw with the campaign. The campaign had turned over tens of, if not hundreds of thousands of documents to Mueller's team. And yet they still got a subpoena. This was a few months back. And the thinking then by prosecutors who've done this before, sometimes even if someone is cooperating, you issue what they call a cleanup subpoena that goes out and just tries to make sure all the loose ends are tied up and everything is in a package. That's one theory, at least that I've heard, that could explain this. The other, of course, is they weren't being cooperative and Mueller felt like he had to pull out the big guns with a subpoena.
Right, right.
So much has happened this week, and we're not going to be able to get to all of it. But Brian, since we have you today and you're from the LA Times, I want to ask you about President Trump's visit to California. He said California Governor Jerry Brown is doing a terrible job running that state.
The taxes are way, way out of whack. And people are going to start to move pretty soon. And if you don't have safety, meaning if you don't have this kind of wall, the drugs are pouring through in California. Can't do it.
And California leaders have already come out and said, wait a minute, we have the sixth largest economy in the world. What are you talking about? How does that play? And does it matter for California if the president is so seemingly anti-California?
Well, certainly in Southern California, people were obsessed with his visit. I was with the president on Air Force One going to California and coming back and spent the day following him around Southern California. And he really went there to do political combat. I mean, he did not reach out to lawmakers or have meetings with many Californians outside of law enforcement or supporters at a fundraiser. And then, of course, he went – his first stop in California was to go to see the 8 wall prototypes outside of San Diego, which is a really contentious issue in the state, immediately insulted the governor and Californians. So it was not a moment where he tried to reach out to people who didn't vote for him. Let's say that.
That's Brian Bennett, White House correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, and Shannon Pettypiece, White House correspondent for Bloomberg. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Hey, good to be on.